Welcome back. This is BTST's podcast, meeting you where you are. I am Chris Simon, and I'm down my co-host for today. Jada McCray is not here with me today. She is in Orlando enjoying some fun in the sun. She's trying to act like she's working in that cough, but we all know that she's at Disney and the Universal Studios living her best life. So hope she stays and has some fun, but gets back soon so that she can help me pick up the pieces. But today I do have a guest host with me today, somebody that I've known for several years now. Yeah, we go back very far. She is one of my first board members, but then also very pivotal in helping us get approved and helping me navigate these mental health, behavior health issues that I have. But then also, navigating the culture and the profession. So, and her name is Nancy Blackwell. How are you?
I'm good. Glad to be here.
Nancy is like, I always try to reference this, but I try to reference the good part of it and not the sexual part of it. Nancy is like the Olivia Pope of like behavioral health, in my opinion. If you need something, you need to know something, you need a connection, you need to figure something out. If you need some crisis management, or if you just need to run some ideas past somebody, personally or professionally, she'll give you a good morning text and she'll listen and give you great sound advice.
I try.
So she's been very helpful in everything and all the growth that BTSE is experiencing. Do you know we're celebrating our 10-year anniversary this year?
I can't believe it.
10 years is a long time, right?
It's a long time.
So that means I must have met you when you were 19.
Probably.
If we're only 10 years now, because that means that you're only 29 now, right?
Exactly.
I know. So, Nance, tell people about what you actually do. Mm-hmm. And give people some of your background and then mm-hmm. talk about what the work. Hold on. Before we go to that, we want to pick back up that this is Social Work Month. And I always like to we're going to highlight a social worker that was, I'm going to have you talk about a social worker that was pivotal in your career. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to recognize someone within BTST. We've done this last week. Being at a Social Work Month, we try to, you know, just shine some light on some of the beautiful people that we're working with. But like I said, talk about what you do mm-hmm. and your background and stuff like that.
So I'm really happy to be here.
I am very happy to be here.
I have been in and around the social work field for the past 25 years. Fresh out of undergrad college, I started working as a case manager in Baltimore City Foster Care. Oh. Wow, that was before I had all this gray hair. So it's a long time ago.
I thought
ago.
You dyed it like that.
Exactly. I
woke
up like
this. I thought you just wanted like blonde streaks or something.
No, this is experience and magic.
You know how a lot of people with dreads, they dyed it. Now, Nancy has these skinny dreads, locks. I guess we call them locks.
Yes.
She has these skinny locks. And you know how people dye their tips and stuff like that. So I thought that Nancy just decided to dye hers blonde for like a more distinguished look.
Absolutely not. This is all God-given gray.
Oh, okay.
So I've always been in and around social work. I started out my career as a case manager in Baltimore City Foster Care. I moved into advocacy and decided to go to graduate school for public administration.
What did you go to grad school at?
University of Baltimore.
Okay.
And I was really interested in the mechanics of human services and social work. I knew a lot about working with clients and working with families and understanding the dynamics and the dysfunction of families, but I was really interested in the back of the house, what made the operation run, who was in charge of the money, who wrote the checks, who made the decisions, whether that was on the legal side, legislatively, in the courts, or also financially around the budgets. So that's what prompted me to study public administration. So that really took me
to... And you have an inner boss in you at all times.
Absolutely.
You've always had the inner boss.
Absolutely. So that really... motivated me to study public administration. I worked for DC Foster Care in the policy office. I'm a technical writer at heart. I can write about any and everything.
So you're like a blogger?
I need
could
to
you be a blogger?
I could be a blogger.
You should.
I could be
a blogger. People like that stuff nowadays.
Yeah.
Don't limit your technicality of your work.
I'm really thinking about writing a book just about my experiences in foster care and child welfare.
That's not. That's a lot of the books that are coming out nowadays.
It is, yeah.
That's not a whole bunch of substantive stuff. It's a more of a, like a messy type of city. I'd never take you for a messy type of person.
Right.
I was just saying.
Yeah, I'm not into spilling the tea. Yeah. I'm more into, you know, sharing knowledge about just what I see as a future in mental health and the future in services for kids and families. I think we are experiencing, it's an interesting time that we live in, whether you look at the Me Too movement mm-hmm. and think about issues of sexual abuse, or whether you think about the women's march and the focus on women's issues, or whether you think about the past couple of years when during the Obama administration, when gay rights were at the forefront of discussions, and all of this is in social work.
Yeah.
We may not think of it as social work, but it's all parts of social
no,
work.
No, I do agree. And I feel like there is a movement, like I don't want to say a woman's renaissance, mm-hmm. But there is definitely a significant movement, and I'm proud to be a part of it in the part that I play mm-hmm. from a male perspective, however yeah. I can support and create and help further someone else's platform or use mine to get the word out and to implement fair employment practices. Mm-hmm. You know, majority of our staff are women.
Yeah.
Our whole top executive management, except for one or two people, are women.
Yeah.
You know, so we aren't, we've always operated that way with BTST, but I do feel that there is a movement that's picking up, and I'm excited and you know, inspired by it.
Yeah, I think especially as it relates to social work, one thing that I'm seeing recently around social work and the movement of women is equity and pay.
Yeah.
And pay equality. I'm sure everybody has talked about Monique and her argument with Charlamagne.
Did you hear us on, did you listen to our podcast
about
that?
Yes, I did.
Did you, you had some opposing views, it seems like?
Not necessarily. I think Monique may not necessarily be the spokesperson that women of color need to discuss pay equity. However, because she brought up the issue, I think she has become our spokesperson. I've seen her on other media outlets, and she's becoming much more articulate about issues around pay equity, especially for women of color.
I think that is a very true point. Like you said, I don't know if she's the best person to further that conversation.
Right.
Not because she's not a woman, or not because she's not. She has a great resume, and she's accomplished in
right.
what she's done. You know what I mean? I think she's arguing a fair point mm-hmm. as far as that macro point.
Right.
But the way it relates to her, I don't think that it's in alignment with what the message really is.
Right.
I think that she took it like Netflix didn't want to pay her
right.
or another woman.
Right.
So is it a woman situation because they've shown that they're paying, is it a color situation because they've shown they're paying other African-Americans. So if it's not a color thing, is it a woman thing? Because they show they're paying other women.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point does it just become a Monique thing
right.
when somebody's job or the way they run their business is to figure out how much we think that this person is worth and what can be the return on what we feel like they, who's their target audience? How many people, what's the draw they're going to mm-hmm. bring out? And if we feel like, hey, judging from what we believe is our research
right.
and what we believe, here's what we feel like the situation is worth.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also doesn't help Monique that other organizations or other companies has been left with a bad taste with her,
right.
whether she was advocating for somebody else justifiably or not. Whatever happened, it left them with a bad taste with them. So now her negotiating and leverage has gone because it's like, well, we know you can't go over there. So we know you can't. So that's not a woman or a black woman thing. That is a business management thing. If I feel like, hey, you can't get this product anywhere else, mm-hmm. then yes, I can upcharge the sale of my product. Or if I feel like, you know, that's just business.
I agree with you on several levels. However, There's lots and lots of data, whether it's from the Department of Labor or Pew Charitable Trusts, around the fact that when women of color, on average, make between 75 cents and 60, between 67 cents and 75 cents to every white male. So yes, Monique may have behaved badly at on different work sites, and she may have a bad reputation. I think we lose all of that in her mess, in the message that she's really trying to bring is about pay equity.
And I'm with that. So with that being, in my opinion, I feel like you have to make it less about the person and more about the institution.
Exactly.
When she makes it about her, there's so many flaws or holes that could be presented in her argument that she may justifiably be able to defend. However, it's going to dilute the message that really needs to go out. If we want to say that, hey, women receive less pay and then black women receive even less pay, those are facts. Right. I'm 1,000% with those. Not at BTST, but those are facts across the country and just in the workforce. However, I feel like she's advocating a point. And right now, she's being that person that's jumping out there for other people when the other black women that could be a point of reference don't have strong resumes anymore, or they have strong resumes, they aren't as relevant anymore to draw a high pay. Now, somebody that will be Tiffany Haddish. I believe that, like with Charlamagne, she will get that payday. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And Issa Rae?
Yes.
She's getting these paydays, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we can't make it about this. And then we can't make it just about Netflix.
Right.
Because they are running their business the best way they know. If you had another media outlet that wasn't turned off in some capacity that you could go, then you could have an even playing field where you can drive the number up on Netflix or take your business elsewhere.
Yeah, I think I think one of the other things that we, especially as people of color, what we should
Go to Revolt. You got Puff over there if you feel like it's a black thing. You know what I mean? There's other outlets.
There are lots of other outlets.
But when you go out and just trying to fight everybody, and that's not the most strategic thing, you know. It's like that. I was at this play, Malcolm versus the meeting of Malcolm and Martin. They're just their two philosophies, how they choose to attack and handle an issue.
Right.
Martin was trying to be a little bit more diplomatic, Malcolm obviously was a lot more aggressive. And while both will yield certain outcomes, and it's hard to determine, did the sit-in help this, or did the fear of this thing help this? It's hard to determine, though, what really did it. But their different approaches yielded them, you know, different outcomes. And I think the same thing with Monique, you know.
Right. And, you know, we don't always know who's going to be chosen. That's the other thing. Would we like a different person to articulate ideas of pay equity for women of color? Probably so. I mean, the whole discussion with Monique calling her husband daddy was completely inappropriate, in my opinion.
That dumbs down the conversation. It takes the validity away from it. Okay, daddy. I'm not mad. First of all, let me say, I aspire for relationship goals like that.
Yes.
However, I would like my wife to have terms of endearment for me similarly, you know what I'm saying? Yes. So I'm not knocking that at all. But I don't expect us to be in a business meeting or like doing some press and marketing, and this is how you're referring to me.
Exactly.
It already lets people look at me like I'm not to be taken overly serious.
Exactly. And I think that, again, I think that is one of the, or I think that's the main challenge with Monique carrying the torch on pay equity for women of color. Did we choose her? I didn't necessarily choose her. However, I think her, what she's bringing is very serious.
Gotcha.
Very serious.
How do we get to this when we're talking about your background?
I have no idea.
But we're going to come back to this because I want to hear what your thoughts are about the future for social work and were saying. But continue to talk about your background. So
okay, so finished grad school, went to DC foster care, worked in policy. I also worked in.
So you were one of those people that actually implemented and used your degree.
Yes.
Immediately.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
I feel like most people in social work, they do.
Yeah,
you use your degree. If you go to social work, you use your degree in some capacity.
Yeah, I think the interesting part along my journey is that I've always been surrounded by social workers, and I think the value that they bring to the work, whether they're practicing or not, is very significant. When I was working in policy, there were many other social workers also working in policy. So their perspective, you know, I brought the business side of social work and human services, and they brought the side of the clients and, you know, let's fight the system together.
So I want you to finish your background, but I'm trying to figure out, should I say it now or should I hold it? I'll wait.
Okay.
So what else? So DC to...
DC and then...
you see the Olivia Pope references. She was in DC doing policy.
Exactly. And at several different agencies and came back to work here in Baltimore at the Maryland Child Welfare Agency. Continued to do policy and contracts and different things like that. And then I came to work at CASA of Baltimore, Court Appointed Special Advocate.
But before CASA, you started your own practice,
yes,
your own group, right?
Definitely.
Olivia Pope and Associates?
Yes, so I started...
the Blackwell Group, right?
I started a company, the Blackwell Group, definitely. And I started that company mainly because I saw many people in the social work field who needed help getting to the finish line with their businesses. There's lots and lots of opportunities for social workers to become entrepreneurs. However, there can be lots of hurdles in order to do business with state agencies, do business with funding sources. So I saw it as an opportunity. I've got the back of the house and the business side of it. So I decided to start the Blackwell Group, and I've helped many companies, many small businesses, many social work entrepreneurs grow their businesses.
How does that feel?
It feels great.
Does
I love
it. Sometimes feel like you're a surrogate, that like you carry and you help and then you pass the baby on?
I do. I really do.
Do you have any attachment?
I feel like I'm attached to every business owner.
Especially
BTSD. And every business owner calls me all the time. It's not like it's a one-time transaction where I may help someone start their business, or I may help someone acquire a license with the state agency or help them get a contract. They still call me back and say, Nancy, this happened, or, you know, the shop blew up. How can we fix it? So I have long-term relationships with the folks that I've helped.
Yes, I know that is true. That means that you do great work.
Yes. And, you know, I like to, I think everyone has an entrepreneur in them. Not everybody has, you know, a financial advisor in them or a social worker in them. So I think everyone has a dream, and sometimes we need help realizing that dream.
So you feel like everyone has an entrepreneur in them?
Everyone has an entrepreneur in them. Whether you were young and you decided to, you wanted to do a lemonade stand, or whether you are an employee and you might sell Mary Kay on the side, or you might sell Avon, or you might do hair, or whatever it is, I think all of us have an entrepreneur in us.
So I was speaking to some second graders yesterday. I had a big old presentation. It was career day at KIPP Academy.
Okay.
And I had to speak to some second graders. And my biggest thing, they was talking about what job they wanted to be, what job they wanted to get, what they wanted to be, this, that, and third. And the biggest thing I wanted them to take away was, don't just do things because this is what somebody else did or just because what you saw someone do. Like, do not let those be a point of reference. It's good to have a mentor and to be able to look at those things, but then it's also better when you can say, that's cool for you, but I want something different. I want to do, while you're going right, I want to go left.
Right.
And excuse me. And for them to take away that it's nothing wrong with having a job.
Yeah.
You need that experience and all that. Or if that is your end game, that's fine.
Right.
However, for some people, it's okay to want to have a business or start what you or you can start the company you want to have and then employ others.
Exactly.
And bring about the vision that you have, that sometimes you as an employee you may be limited on what you can do. So I had this conversation with them, and I was asking them, how old do you have to be to be an entrepreneur? 50 years old, 40 years old? And then some people were like, 19, you can be an entrepreneur right now.
Exactly.
And I was asking them, how many businesses can one entrepreneur have? And they were like, one at a time. And I was like, no, you know. And so it was just good conversation with them. But that entrepreneurial piece of it, I feel like is something that's lacking in our school systems.
In colleges, it's
lacking. And just all together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's from a fundamentally structured way like that, if it's designed that way, mm-hmm. or what. But yeah, I do feel like it's lacking.
Yeah, you know, one of my one of the books that I try to tell starting out entrepreneurs to read is the biography about Steve Jobs. And actually, I just recently watched his commencement speech at Stanford University.
Yeah.
And it was really funny because he talked about, you know, not having anyone really talk about starting a business. And the fact that he started a business, got kicked out of his business, came back to the business, started several, many, many other businesses. And he's also been responsible for encouraging and bringing along many other entrepreneurs. So I think, you know, as an entrepreneur, yourself as an entrepreneur, I'm sure there are several people that you've touched that have started their own businesses.
Yeah, you see it all the time. And that's, I do see it all the time. Like people that may have worked with me in EXO, mm-hmm. and they have this ambition to grow, and they like what you do, and they see how you do it, and you know, and then they just want to take it and add their own spin on it, mm-hmm. And they leave and go do stuff sometimes in uncordial ways, you know. Yeah. But I do see that fire that burns within them to go do stuff, and then also like with BTST, we encourage. The thing with BTST is that I know the plight. And I know some of the fears of entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So what we encourage is that you don't have to leave. If you have right. this idea, let's partner together.
Exactly.
Because what is also missing in that entrepreneurship perspective, and it's I think it's the current environment that we're in where people value notoriety and likes right. over true substance, that people decide to move individually than as a collective.
Exactly.
And it's not saying, hey, suppress your entrepreneurship spirit, you know? And I'm guilty of it as well because I was working at a non-public school and I worked for other mental health, behavioral health organizations. And I'm pretty sure I could have took my skill set and continued to further and add to what they're doing. However, I felt more passionately about what I wanted to do and the voids that I saw, and I wanted to fix that. So as I say, you know, say this statement, I'm also contradicting it, but I try to tell people that we are a movement by ourselves, but we're mm-hmm. forced together.
Exactly.
When we learn that we can work together, and working together sometimes is better than working individually, mm-hmm. especially if your goal for working individually is for notoriety and fame.
Right.
You know, if it's finance, sometimes that's understood. Yeah. But sometimes how can we work together that we can leverage these finances to make more together, you know, mm-hmm. versus having 100% of a little bit.
Right.
Let's have 50% of a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's, so yeah, there, I do feel, but sometimes I do disagree that I don't think that everybody has an entrepreneur in them. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the entrepreneur is suppressed and has several, you know, like I have six pack.
Yeah.
I have a six pack, right?
It's hidden.
It's hidden under a few, not as many layers as it used to be because I'm pescatarian and I've lost weight. So I've been working out. You know, I just came from yoga just now. But, I have a six pack in me, you know, just mm-hmm. as people, as you say, people have entrepreneur in them. Maybe it's just hidden with under some laziness or right. some fatigue or yeah. lack of knowledge or exposure.
Fear
as well.
Fear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, your point about collective work is very important. I was in at the Aspen Institute in Aspen, Colorado back in October, and it was a conference about opportunity youth. Young people ages 16 to 25 who are not engaged in work or education activities. And I was in a session and there were employers on the panel and they were talking about how to engage employers and basically how can we beg people to give young people jobs. Mm-hmm. And I had this aha moment. Why are we sitting here begging employers to give young people jobs? Why aren't we creating opportunities for entrepreneurship at a higher rate for younger people than, you know, or supporting younger people to become entrepreneurs. And I sort of tuned out to what the panel was saying, and I really took a deep dive and looked inward about just my experience over the years with entrepreneurs that I've run into and that I've helped along the way.
Yeah. So we're going to come back to the entrepreneurship part. Mm-hmm. But so you're at CASA now, right?
Yes, CASA, Court Appointed Special Advocates of Baltimore City.
And what exactly do you guys do there? What's the fancy title?
So CASA
Court
is
Appointed
Special Advocates.
Special Advocates, okay.
Yes. So CASA is a child advocacy organization. We are a very lean organization. It's about 8 staff in total, and we have 200 volunteers.
8 staff. Pretty lean.
Very lean. and 200 volunteers. And those volunteers are everyday citizens over the age of 21. They go through 30 hours of training and they get a background check. And once they complete that, they are assigned or appointed to a specific child in foster care. And they advocate for that child's best interests in juvenile court.
And this is just volunteer?
Volunteers, yes.
Wow.
So the volunteers get to know the child, talk with everyone involved in the child's case, and they write recommendations. They write a court report to the court about what's in the best interest of the child.
So how is this helpful in the whole court process and everything like that? What type of charges are these mm-hmm. kids facing, or is it a certain mm-hmm. is it a certain type of charge or a certain population?
So these kids are not charged with anything. So back in, I want to say 1987, Judge Succop in Seattle, Washington, put an ad in a local newspaper. He said he couldn't sleep at night because he was making decisions on kids in foster care, on where they should be placed, and he wasn't necessarily comfortable with those decisions. So he put an ad for volunteers, and he wanted the volunteers to be neutral parties, to be the eyes and the ears for the court, to give court information that the court may not have. Kids in foster care have court hearings every 6 months. They are in foster care at no fault of their own because of abuse or neglect by an adult in their life. So it's not like the kids have any kinds of charges.
So this is not that type of court.
Yes.
This is foster care court.
Foster care court.
Gotcha.
Yes.
I knew that, but I just wanted to make sure people listening.
Everybody
knew
that. Good. So so the volunteers make recommendations for services. They make recommendations for parents. So let's say a kid is in the process of being returned to their parent. And let's say the parent needs help with furniture and the kid needs mental health services. The CASA volunteer would recommend to the court
to go to www.btscservices.com and click the link that says referral that will follow you around the page.
Exactly. Yes. So a kid may need mental health services. A parent may need furniture to secure the reunification. And the CASA volunteer would let the court know what's happening in the case. Even though there are social workers involved, there's attorneys involved, CASA volunteers are neutral. They're not paid, so, you know, they have no skin in the game.
So that was going to be my next question. Like, what is the difference between the CASA worker and the mm-hmm. social worker that's caring that the child is in custody, not custody, but that has a social worker for?
Right. So social workers are bound by the state and federal laws. So
y'all just ruthless. Y'all don't have to worry about, exactly. You're not bound by these laws.
We're not bound by, and you know, we're bound by good behavior, but we're not bound with the things that we can say or recommend. So for example, we may recommend that, you know, Johnny told his volunteer he wants to play baseball. We may recommend to the court that Johnny is allowed extracurricular activity to join the Roland Park baseball team, or, you know, Johnny may need braces. We can recommend anything.
But a social worker can as well.
The social worker can also, but they are limited. They do have limitations.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you guys can just come up with the wildest,
yes,
and best plan for the kid.
Exactly. Yeah, we are all we're all about best interest. What's in the best interest of the child?
So speaking of, have you guys ever, or do you guys have the ability to say that, you know, reunification is not a good idea and
absolutely.
Stuff like that, and you guys' voices are heard and valued in that type of conversation?
Definitely. We make recommendations about permanency all the time. And sometimes, you know, our recommendations may not be aligned with what the child would like, or what the social worker would like, or what the child's attorney would like. So we are neutral. We understand that what we're recommending may not necessarily be liked by parties involved in the case.
So who brings you into the case? Is it something like, if I'm a parent, I want to call CASA and say, hey, I want you guys because you guys helped my friend get her kid back? Or is this the social worker that will call you, the kid that will call you, or does this come straight through the court?
This comes straight from the court. We get most of our referrals from judges and sometimes the child's attorney, sometimes parents' attorneys.
Okay. And so you have 8 people, but then you have 200 volunteers who take up, who do a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, so the volunteers are supervised. We have supervisors, actually one that is a, she's my champion. She's a lifelong social worker. She has like 40 years in social work.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. We also support social work students. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But yes, my staff are well-trained in social work. They know child welfare. They know the ins and outs of family dynamics, and they really support the volunteers. Volunteers aren't just left to run.
Where do you find the volunteers? 200 volunteers is a lot of volunteers.
Oh, yeah. So we find them everywhere. We're at a lot of community events. We do, we have information sessions out in the community. Most of the fairs around the city, you'll see the CASA table. We're recruiting volunteers all the time.
Gotcha.
And then also word of mouth. We have a good group of volunteers that bring their friends along.
So is there a certain background, qualification, age that the volunteers have to have?
So all volunteers have to be over the age of 21. They have to get fingerprinted, have a background check, be interviewed, also attend 30 hours of training, and then get sworn in by the court. CASA of Baltimore is one of 14 programs in the state. And we are one of 900 programs around the country. CASA is a huge organization. We are the, and we're all independent nonprofit organizations.
So that was about to be my next question. How is it funded? It seems like it's a great program. It has great benefits, but is this federally funded where, you know, you got, because you can't bill for these services, can you? Or is it just grant funded?
It's grant. So most of our funds are grant funded. Grant funds, we have some corporate sponsors and individual donors. And then throughout the year, there's also fundraising opportunities.
Speaking of,
The Art of Caring.
Okay.
Which is coming up on April 29th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m.
April 29th?
April 29th.
That's the day after my birthday.
It's a Sunday.
Yeah, it's always around my birthday.
Always around your birthday. It's
hence
all
the reason
about
why I'm not
Chris
able
Simon.
To make it
exactly,
sometime.
Yeah. Because you're out traveling.
Or it's home sleeping.
Exactly. Yeah. So The Art of Caring, we've had it every year for the past 8 years. It's a huge art event. It's usually about 75 local artists that donate a piece of work for the event, and we have a silent auction.
Well, you know, I'm a piece of work myself.
Yeah, exactly. So you could be.
I have enough to go around.
We could auction you off.
You're gonna need some big. You're gonna need some big donors
some big
for that
donors,
one,
right?
You want a piece of work like this?
So it's about 75 local artists. They donate their work, and we auction it off. We always have the event at Area 405, which is in Station North, a beautiful art gallery owned by Stuart Watson, who's a local artist. And we raise between $75,000 and $100,000 each year from that one event.
Wow.
It's a great event.
That's nice.
Yeah, we have lots of good food. We have local restaurants.
I didn't know you were doing it big like that.
Oh, yeah. It's about 400 people that come to this event.
Oh, wow.
I feel like I plan a wedding every single year.
There are some people that do that. My wife watched those reality shows, and this one lady was planning a wedding every year.
Oh, my God. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of work that goes into it. CASA is overseen by a board of directors, so I've got about 20 local great folks from around the city that sit on our board that support the organization and really promote the event.
So you have 20 people on your board?
Yes.
Jeez, I'm barely struggling to get 4.
Yes, it's a huge commitment.
Maybe that's because I'm a piece of work.
Because I'm a piece of work
art.
Too, so you know. It's
I like to think I'm a piece of art, not
piece
a piece of
art,
work.
Yeah. Yes, a piece of artwork.
A piece of artwork. There we go. When is it again?
The Art of Caring. It's April 29th, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Area 405.
How can people buy tickets or submit
get
art
information?
Stuff?
So go to the CASA website. It's www.casabalt.org.
So you have so we have so much. I didn't realize that we have so much that we could talk about with you. So we're gonna make this a 2-part series. But being that it's Social Work Month, mm-hmm. I want you to maybe we'll conclude this one with, why do you like working in the social work field? Mm-hmm. And I want to spend some time talking about the social workers becoming entrepreneurs and some programs and some opportunities and stuff like that that's out there, because I think that we have a good listening base of social workers and people in there, and sometimes they think that it's just, hey, I'm just limited to these things. So mm-hmm. I would like to get into that. Then I want to get into the business component, like the back, what do you call it, the back of the house stuff.
Back of the house, yes.
Talk about how important that is and how sometimes people don't see that there is a significant need or attention that needs to be paid to the business part of it. Mm-hmm. While you are doing a great work, but you have to still do the work as well. It's a big organization.
Yeah.
But what has inspired you about social work, being that it's Social Work Month? Why, mm-hmm. What is it for you? I know you say you've been around other people, but what is the part for you?
I think just seeing children and families progress to meet their full potential, whatever that is. I think social work is such a great field, and it's an opportunity for individuals to help other individuals grow to their full potential. You know, when I think of young people who may have special needs or people who may have mental health diagnoses, and the fact that a social worker can come in and help them with medication management, help them with goals that are specific to them, and really make an impact on their life.
Who is somebody that made an impact on your life as a social worker?
Oh, there are so many. I have so many friends.
You can start with
Chris
Simon.
I was going to put you on that list. I would say yourself.
You don't have to.
No, definitely.
If you want to, I mean, not going to stop you.
Definitely. I have lots of friends that are social workers. Yourself inspire me. My husband, Mike Allen, he inspires me.
Yeah, he does great work as well.
Yeah, and you know, his background has been on around violence prevention. He worked closely with young men who committed acts of violence. They were victims, but they were also perpetrators. I have a very good friend, Karen Butler, who is a social worker. Actually, she is the director of Department of Social Services for Howard County. And she's always shown me that to be a visionary in social work and really think about the role that government plays in the avenue of social work. Another good friend, Dr. John Monroe, who is has his doctorate in social work.
Oh.
He really, really introduced me to the business side, especially for minorities in social work. I would also say Howard University and Morgan State, being the HBCUs in the area.
Well, yes, Morgan State does do great stuff, and they have a phenomenal president of their National Alumni Association for Social Work. His name is Chris Simon, by the way. So, yes, I do
and
agree.
And, I mean, those two universities really produce so many social work entrepreneurs that I know personally. I'm just blown away by that.
Yeah. Mike, speaking of, he also does some phenomenal trainings.
Exactly.
Mike did some trainings for us. We got to get him back to do some more. He did this one training, and it always sticks out to me. I use this statement all the time when we're talking about self-care and how you need mm-hmm. to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And he gave me the plane analogy about when you're on an airplane and they say, in a case of emergency, secure your mask and then secure everyone else's.
Mm-hmm.
We as social workers and as individuals run around securing everybody else's mask that we don't take time to secure our own.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that's led to like my change in diet, mm-hmm. change in lifestyle, just, you know, doing yoga.
Mm-hmm.
I've got my Zen on and all this other stuff. You know what I mean?
It's very important. Self-care is very important in this business because, again, like you said, you're taking care of everyone else. It's very important to take care of yourself.
Yeah, we're doing that for some of our social workers this month. We're having a game night.
We're getting
massages for them. So we're taking care of the social workers who go out and take care of a lot of the individuals mm-hmm. in the community. But, you know, that's always been the BTST approach, that we always move as a family and we like to take care each other. And if you would like to join our family, we are actively hiring. You can go to our webpage, www.btstservices, and you can apply online. You can see several videos about the different work that we do and our work environment. So if you're interested in joining the team or want to refer someone else, please send them. We're actively looking for licensed therapists, PRP counselors, and a multitude of other things. So, Nance, how soon can we get you back on? I know you have this very chaotic and hectic schedule.
I am available whenever BTST would like.
So awesome. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Welcome, 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 welcome back. This is part two of BTSC's podcast, Meeting Where You Are, with Nancy Blackwell of the Blackwell Group, of CASA, of everything else. Of just a wealth of knowledge. So I want to just hop right back in, because last week's one was really good. But I felt like it was good, but I want it to be great when we put it out. I don't want to leave people like, oh, that was cool. I want them to get the full impact of how great and how awesome you are and your wealth of knowledge and everything like that. So just hopping right back in. You don't mind if I eat my grapes, do you?
Eat away.
You know, I'm still doing my pescatarian, vegetarian, fruitarian thing. So just hopping back in. Last week, I don't know if I asked you, but why do you like working in a social work arena?
For many reasons. It's very dynamic. It's never the same. Every day is very different.
Oh, you like that, huh?
I love it, yes.
You love the inconsistency.
Yes. Oh, very wow. Inconsistent, very dynamic, always changing.
That fits right into your personality.
Yes.
Your daughter's going to be a social worker if that's the case then.
She is already practicing social work in the fourth grade.
Okay. That's funny. But were you saying, what do you like about being in social work arena?
It's very dynamic, always changing. Laws always changing. Policies are changing. People are very dynamic.
No, I'm sorry. I said, what do you like about working in a social work field?
All of that. I think that's really what I like, the fact that it's always changing. You know, we always evolve as humans. Hopefully we always evolve. Sometimes we have to drag people along, but,
yes.
You know, we're always evolving. Our environment is always changing. Just within the last 24 hours, the environment in Washington, D.C. has definitely changed.
What happened? I haven't even... Just, I've been away from the TV.
Just all of the drama with the president.
Stormy Daniels, is this what it is?
Stormy Daniels, yes.
Oh, really? I might need to get caught up, huh?
Yes. Turn on CNN and see what's happening.
Wow. What's yes. A crazy political climate that we live in
very
right now.
Very crazy climate.
Speaking of policies and political stuff, people think that getting into social work, when they get into social work, they only think about, a lot of people think about direct care.
Mm-hmm.
And social work is bigger than direct care.
Social work is enormous.
Yeah.
It's enormous.
So from a policy perspective, mm-hmm. Can you talk about how social workers can get involved as far as that? Like if you're interested in, you may have a political background, or you may have, you may want to get into politics, mm-hmm. or something like that. People think that I just have to go and be a lawyer or political science. But they don't know that social workers are influential in politics and policy as well.
Exactly. So one of the most famous African-American social workers.
Chris Simon,
yes. And also Dr. Dorothy Height.
Oh, no.
And, you know, when we think of social.
Please don't mention Chris Simon in the same sentence as that person again.
when we think about social justice and organizing, you know, we had students all across the country 2 days ago, I think it was, where they walked out of class and they were protesting gun violence. They're on their way. Yeah, definitely.
I need to get around the TV.
And I don't even have a TV, but I get the alerts on my phone about what's happening in the world.
Look at them.
Yeah, so, you know, the young people in this country protested the gun violence in school and the fact that they're not safe. And that is a social justice movement. That is also a part of social work. We may not always call that social work, but organizing, doing things in your community, starting out, you know, knocking on doors, all of that is social justice and social work.
Gotcha. So from a policy perspective, it's good. But I feel like one of the bigger things is about like entrepreneurship.
Yes.
People don't put a lot. Well, we're going to say I'm going to come back to the entrepreneurship part. Mm-hmm. But talk about how big. We talked about direct care. We talk about policy. Mm-hmm. But then talk about business and social work, because people sometimes think that, oh, I'm a social worker. One, I shouldn't make a lot of money.
Wrong.
Two, that I am a social worker, so I just care about the quality of work that I do. Like, I had staff that would tell me, I just care about the quality of work. I don't care about the business part. And it's like, whoa, as a manager or as executive management, you have to be concerned with both parts. But people always put great emphasis, which we do not want to change, mm-hmm. into direct care and the work that they do. Mm-hmm. But a lot of organizations sometimes don't put enough time into business. Like me, not to stroke my own ego, but literally my undergrad was in business, mm-hmm. business marketing, and then my master's was in social work, mm-hmm. and I think that has led to great things for BTST, mm-hmm. and within my experience and work field here. Because I look at things from a social work perspective, mm-hmm. but then I also have a certain amount of business acumen, I guess, and business skill set that allows us to be able to operate, hopefully at good margins, mm-hmm. Understand about just how to market the business, mm-hmm. and about just checking balances and how we need to grow as a total organization. So speak about, you spoke before about how you were in the back office, mm-hmm. and all that. I mean, the back of the house. Back of the house. But talk about that, because that a lot of times gets overlooked.
So there are many angles that we can start talking about business and entrepreneurship within social work. There are many social workers that have an excellent rapport with their clients. If they use a certain technique with their clients, that could easily become an evidence-based practice or a model that they could easily sell, or a curriculum that they could develop and sell to other people within the social work field. Also research. There's lots and lots of opportunity for research. I think the skill of being a social worker is a great skill. And again, there are many specific techniques that social workers use with their clients. Those techniques can easily be marketed, sold, replicated across the country.
Exactly. I know for us, like, we paid to have our therapist trauma train.
Of course.
At the Forens Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And
look at how much you paid for your staff trained.
It was a hefty amount of money.
Exactly. If you created that trauma model, you could easily then sell that model.
So then what I'm going to do is take the training that we learned and then market it specifically for trauma, so that you're not just referring to an organization that we have therapists that do all these different things, but we have specific trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're looking to develop some of our own curriculums and practices for like specific models and specific demographics, individuals. And we're going to package that and market that as a unique specialty. But as far as like, also like just business,
mm-hmm.
You've seen the rise, you've seen the fall,
mm-hmm.
of some organizations because business practices aren't as tight. Just speak about that. Like,
yeah.
the part about just the business of social work, the back office stuff. Like, people think that direct, I keep saying this, people think that direct care is the only thing, but there's a whole organization, there's a budget that needs to be done, there's checks and balances there.
Exactly.
Hiring, firing.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta allot money to these things. You gotta put money into your organization. I see a lot of organizations myself that like to shortchange in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, well, not in the beginning. Sometimes I understand throughout. When you're smaller, you're working with less resources. But even larger organizations, they don't want to spend the necessary money that it takes mm-hmm. to develop and hone and bring forth a good product.
Yeah, well, it's very important from it's very important from the very beginning of starting a business that you know what your numbers are, that you start with a budget, you figure out how much is it going to take for me to start this business, number one, and then number two, what will it take to maintain the business? Whether that is trying to figure out how many employees you need to have, how are you going to do your billing? Do you need to hire someone to do your billing? Even with maintaining your client notes, are you going to have a paper-based system or are you going to have a cloud-based system? I know several people within the industry, within the social work industry, that have created databases because they know all the ins and outs and what should be captured throughout the life of a case. So that's another potential business opportunity. And then as a business owner, the quality assurance piece. Who's going to do your checks and balances? Who's going to ensure that, number one, your staff are doing what they need to do, your clients are being seen, and then also your business practice, the finances of your company is legitimate yeah. and above board?
Yeah, you find that a lot of organizations sometimes, I see a few of them, like, do you have an accountant? No. Do you have a bookkeeper? No. Do you have an attorney? No.
Wrong, and wrong.
It's like, well, who's doing these things? Who's doing your payroll? We are. Well, not saying that you can't do it internally, but right. you specifically are the person doing it all. And I understand that in a small practice sometimes, in a small business, because I'm not speaking from this elitist status,
right.
that you have to do everything within the organization. Because you know, being one of our first board members, that I was the CEO.
You had to wear all
I was
hats.
The front desk. I exactly. was all of this. I was all of that. However, I never became complacent and tried to continue to do these things myself because I wanted to see the business evolve. Mm-hmm. And speaking of evolving, like, I feel like there are a lot of organizations that, and sometimes you get staff be like, well, our billing has gone up and this and that, so, you know, we can make more, we're making more money, so we should be able to pay higher salaries, this and that. When, mind you, I feel like our pay is significantly higher than majority of people mm-hmm. in the field mm-hmm. As far as what we pay our staff. But then in addition to that, people look at it like this is a business. While we provide these services right now, we're looking to grow this business and diversify into other stuff mm-hmm. within this social work, mental health, behavior health, or community field. So people just see, hey, this is just what I'm going to do, and that's it. And they need to look at it like, hey, what I'm doing now provides me a platform to be able to add additional programming or other business opportunities within this same type of field that I'm working in. So I can't just splurge on one thing without being able to properly save for something else we're looking to expand.
Exactly. So it's really important, especially as minority-owned businesses, it's very important that we look at diversity within our business. I know many businesses may start out small, they may start out doing one thing, but it's very important to grow your business, look at different opportunities, and there are many opportunities within social work, within behavioral health, within community-based practice, and to add on additional services, one, to service your clients better, and to improve your business practices. But I always talk about Walt Disney.
Yes.
And I always
stuck with me ever since
I always talk about the Walt Disney model. So we may, because we're here on the East Coast, we, you know, a lot of our favorite family vacation spot is Disney World. So what do you do when you go to Disney World? You leave BWI Airport and you get on your airline and you fly into Orlando. The Disney hotel van is there to meet you. They take you to your Disney hotel. You then go from your Disney hotel to your Disney theme parks. You eat at the Disney restaurants.
You buy Disney merchandise.
You buy Disney merchandise. You go back to the airport, and then you come back home. All of your vacation dollars have been spent at Disney World.
Yep.
All of your vacation dollars have gone to Walt Disney and his descendants. So it's very important to think about your business as the Walt Disney model. You want to keep your customer in your space. So you want to make sure that your customer has therapy, They have community-based services. They have medication monitoring. They have all of those services. You really don't want your customer to go to other places. It's just like when you go to Nordstrom's. They sell every brand that you like, so you won't have to go outside
of Towson no more. They've consolidated. I'm like, what? And what are y'all doing here? Y'all Nordstrom's or y'all Caldor's?
Caldor. Oh, my
you
God.
You Caldor? Like, y'all Nordstrom's or Caldor? Jeez, I can get the same stuff at Walmart now.
Oh my goodness. So yes, back to the Disney model. Yes. So yeah, so you want to grow your business and make sure that you can keep your clientele within your doors so that they don't take their dollars elsewhere.
And then even more like for us, I don't want to give out our whole business plan, but even outside of just mental health, what are other things that are impacting our clients and our customers? How can we now work to improve those situations, whether it's through another service, whether it's through additional needs that they have, that basic necessity needs that everyone has, can we help in some capacity into that? So so we're just speaking about like entrepreneur, I mean like business owners being able to diversify with your service offering, but additional to your service offering within it, within like I guess stuff that goes through like the mental department of mental health and hygiene. There are other contracts that come out and stuff like that that people don't know about. You get a lot of these RFPs and stuff like that. That's also a lane that people can get in that may not want to do therapy, rehabilitative services. There are a whole gamut of things that come out to train people to train DSS workers to do certain things. How do people find out about those and what opportunities are out there?
So there's lots of contracting opportunities. I'm sure you even have contracting opportunities within your business. I'm sure you have some staff that may be full-time staff, or there may be some staff that are 1099 or contractual staff. So I think when people think about themselves as an individual, they also need to think about themselves as a small business. So who can I contract with? So there's lots of opportunities through the state of Maryland, through most local governments. There's lots of training opportunities. I would encourage people to, if they're interested in starting a business, start on Maryland's website on how to start a business, and then you'll be linked to contracting opportunities.
So a common myth in this field is that a lot of people believe that they have to be nonprofit organizations to have a behavioral health company. So speak about the difference between, not the difference, but the advantages for someone who might not know of being a nonprofit versus a for-profit, because there are benefits of being a nonprofit, of funding, of sources and everything that you can get.
So one of the things that I would caution about with folks wanting to go the nonprofit route is that there's a...
People think nonprofit like... Well, I ain't gonna make no money because it's nonprofit. It's like, well, you know, nonprofit doesn't mean that you're not gonna have a profit.
Right. Yeah. I think so. Yes, there's lots of myths about nonprofit organizations. The one thing that I would caution folks, and with any business, whether you're a for-profit business or a nonprofit business, is that you have to learn the rules on how your business operates. There are many rules with having a not-for-profit business, and also many rules with having a regular for-profit business. And there are opportunities for grant funding for your nonprofit business, just as there are opportunities for contracting in your for-profit business.
So for clarity, for-profit business cannot get grants.
Not necessarily.
Yes.
Yes, that's correct.
I just wanted to clarify that for people, because they like, you know, I'm gonna get a grant, I'm gonna get these grants, and it's like, no, you have to be a non. I'm saying have to from my understanding,
right?
And that's majority cases, I guess, that you have to be nonprofit to be able to receive grant funding.
Yes. And you also have to have been in business a significant amount of time for most grants to show that, you know, you are able to do the projects that you're interested in.
So what are like some grants out there that people might not know about? That you see come across your desk?
So I would say more contracts and, you know, less grants.
Okay, so contracts like what?
So let me give you an example of a contract. So some state agencies may seek providers or vendors to work with them. You know, we often hear about big government. The government cannot do all things for all people, so they contract out with companies to do the work. So like right now there is a contract out for the Maryland Department of Juvenile Services.
Is that the one you just sent?
Yes, okay. For psychological services and psychiatric services.
I forwarded that to Jada and Ashley yesterday.
Okay. So a company like yourself could write a proposal and potentially become the vendor that the state of Maryland uses to provide that service.
Gotcha.
Yes.
So what other type of contracts are you used to seeing? Just trying to get the listeners some.
So if you think about school supplies, mm-hmm. or office supplies or toilet paper or van service or insurance, all sorts of the state and even the federal government, they purchase all sorts of things.
So I know some of the ones I saw before, it's like that you could be a trainer that could train like the Department of Social Service, some of their caseworkers, mm-hmm. and certain things. So if you are an educator, mm-hmm. In the social work field, like we're going to have one of my professors on and one of the head people at Morgan School of Social Work next week, there's stuff that they can do outside of just being like, in addition to being a professor or an educator,
exactly.
That you could take your knowledge and package that into doing trainings and stuff like that.
Exactly.
There are opportunities out there. People need CEU training. So if you have a wealth of knowledge in a specific topic, then you can develop a training that people can buy from there.
Mm-hmm.
If you have programming that's not, maybe not, like sometimes my first contract was in the school system, it was a non-public school. So it wasn't mm-hmm. even like Baltimore City Public Schools. It was Baltimore City Public School, but it was a level 5 school.
Mm-hmm.
And we provided one-on-ones for them.
Exactly.
So there are so many different areas in which social workers can grow and develop outside of just direct service.
Exactly.
Another thing, while we were talking about the business, it's important that you stay relevant. And I see some businesses, honestly, and I don't know how they're still in business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what did y'all do? How are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, who's the staff for this? Okay.
Yeah. I think it's really important, you know, considering that we live in the information age and there's so many opportunities to find out what's happening within the social work field, participating in your alumni group from your college, reading articles, seeing who the thinkers are in social work, what's happening, I can't remember the name of the organization, but the Black Social Workers or the National Black Child Development Institute. You know, there's lots of places where you can get information on what the current thinking is, what the current research is in social work, so that you can stay abreast of what's happening within the community. Lots of information coming out about opioid addiction.
Yeah.
We may know opioids as a different name from 40 years ago called heroin.
Yeah.
So,
it's,
you know,
only become an epidemic when it's opioid.
Exactly. So, you know, we have skills around working with families that have issues of addiction with heroin from 40 years ago. We need to dust off some of those skills and maybe repackage it and use them or sell them.
Yeah. Sell them, which is good for business. Business owners also need to be aware, like, there are things that impact the business outside of just, like, service. Like, this new sick and safe leave policy that DLLR has developed.
Exactly.
Now, for business owners, some people might not know this, and they might not know how to approach it and just mm-hmm. or whatever, which could lead to very
costly.
Yeah, I know some businesses' exposure was, like, an additional $80,000
mm-hmm.
a year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're already operating at a certain profit margin or little to no profit margin,
mm-hmm.
one day you just wake up and, like, a few months prior they say, hey, you got to give sick and safe leave to everyone.
Right.
So you got to be able to understand what's happening, prepare for these trends,
mm-hmm.
keep yourself at a good profit margin so that you can be able to absorb
mm-hmm.
certain things. I see some organizations, they just do well and then they just have beach houses everywhere and everything like that. Not saying that you cannot spend your money however you choose to.
Right.
It's just that I'm just saying that we all as business people have to understand that this is a business and it requires a CEO. It requires somebody with a business mindset to further and push this business along, but then also prepare for the ups and the down times as well.
Yeah. It was interesting when you said you you've spoken to people and asked, do they have an accountant? Do they have an attorney? Do they have, you know, do they have someone within the insurance business? I would recommend that everyone set up their own personal board of directors that is specific for the CEO. The CEO needs to have someone that they can reach out to when they have questions, and also who feeds them information, whether it is the new policy around health insurance that recently came out from the Affordable Care Act. If you have 10 or more employees, you have to offer health insurance. That one simple law affected many small businesses. But small business owners also need, and also large business owners, need someone to feed them information as well as for them to bounce questions off of.
Yeah. But I think that sometimes people get into social work and they don't think about that business component of it, so they don't know that or think that they need these resources. I've just been blessed to have a phenomenal board that has been able to push us and motivate us to know, to do continue to do things correct and legit. So before we conclude, mm-hmm. I know last time you were talking about the future of social work mm-hmm. and that you feel like things are moving in a certain direction and they're changing. I want you to speak more about where you feel like social work is going and how you what your level of excitement is behind it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think when I think about how social work is a part of all parts of our life, social work is a part of the healthcare. Social work is a part of education. It's a part of the workforce. And there's opportunities within all of those domains within social work that's coming full speed ahead. When we think about kids with autism and how there are so many services built around serving this population that we thought 20 years ago, what would we do with this huge explosion of kids with autism? And even now with young people and adults with mental health diagnoses that we were worried about, how are we going to serve them at the community-based level? So I think there's lots of opportunity. And when we think about the military, you know, we've got people who are dealing with trauma and PTSD from wars that we are still involved in. So there's social work in all parts of our life.
So I'm excited more about like the technology advancements.
Definitely.
And just like the creativity that we can now bring into social work. For a while, social work has been like this obsolete mm-hmm. field. You got to do paper intake packets.
Exactly.
And you got to do mailers and stuff like that. Like think yeah. about this. For years, people were still sending out mailers.
Exactly.
And stuff like, bro, this is the age of social media. This mm-hmm. is the age of internet. This yeah. is the age of like technology, and we're still using these obsolete models to communicate. Mm-hmm. So those type of things are the things that I'm excited about, like this podcast.
Yes.
Like who would have thought 3 years ago
right.
that a mental health organization would have a radio type of show?
Right.
Most still don't think that way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is the reason why BTSC is a trailblazer, which is in our mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
But we're trying to be on that, you know.
Or look at some of the therapists who now do therapy via FaceTime.
Yeah, so we that's what my next thing, that we got approved for telehealth.
Exactly.
So you can do, it started off just as assessments, mm-hmm. But now I think you can actually do sessions via telehealth.
Exactly. So, think about if you had a client who was agoraphobic and
was a what?
Agoraphobic. And
what is agoraphobic?
Someone who's afraid to come out of their house.
Is that what that's called?
Yes.
Oh.
So
you taught me something.
Let's say you had a client who was afraid to come out because of, you know, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And they wanted to access services.
Yeah.
Because of technology, they are able to access services.
And I think that the mold is breaking from this traditional paradigm of how you do things. And an understanding we have to, which is the theme at BTSE, meet you where you are.
Exactly.
We have to develop this service so that there's no there's no hindrance in you receiving the adequate care that you need. Like I'm going to, like our telehealth thing. And it makes business practice so much more efficient as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
Because versus me having a staff to have a doctor here and in PG at the same time.
Exactly.
But not be able to fill them up at both locations. If I can telehealth in certain people from another location and still see these people in person.
Exactly.
It makes business practice so much more efficient. Like we have a social media page. We have mm-hmm. a blog. We have all these different things that are happening. We have our parent portal. We're utilizing video so much. And these things cost money.
Right.
So it's not like, so from a business perspective, Renato's shaking his head like, yep, make sure you have my check before I leave here. But no, like these things cost money, you know, and a lot of people don't put effort into these different components to make the business grow. So those are some of the things that I'm excited about, like the future of social work.
And I think that, you know, the other thing that I'm excited about is also an additional thing around technology is just how social workers are able to do notes and assessments, and you know, everything is now cloud-based.
Yeah, electronic medical records.
Exactly. We're not stuck with the pen and paper. We've got the electronic.
We've had them for seven years now.
Exactly.
But we are BTSD.
Yes.
Trailblazer. Why do you love BTSD?
I do. I love BTST because there is yoga on Fridays for staff.
Yes.
There's a gym here.
Yes.
There's an opportunity for your clients to engage in art therapy.
Yes.
There's an opportunity for clients to engage in fitness therapy. So I think the traditional modalities of social work and mental health practices are out of the door here at BTST, and new ways of thinking and engaging clients is what you're all about.
Thank you. I'm glad that you see that.
Yes, that's why I love BTSD.
That is very evident of who we are. So if people want to find out some more about these opportunities, these contracts, grants, not only do you find out about them, but you also write them as well. You can work with them to develop their curriculum and write them up for them, right?
Yes, definitely.
How can they contact you or get with you to get on your mailing list or work with you directly in reference to some, you know, writing or policy stuff?
So people can reach me by email. I am N.K. Blackwell.
What's the K for?
K-A-Y. I'm Nancy K.
Oh, really?
Yes, Nancy K. Blackwell. So,
Are you related to Mary?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Middle name.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So I'm nkblackwell@gmail.com. Feel free to email me. I would prefer not to give out my phone number, but please.
You're not going
to
do the Mike Jones and give out your phone number?
I am not going to be Mike Jones.
And Mike Jones!
That's a question in the Black Card.
I can't even remember the
name. I think it's 215.
Like that. Mike, well, you listen to that trap music, Nancy.
Exactly.
And you're a yoga instructor, listen to Mike Jones.
Exactly.
Okay. So it was great. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, thank you. This was great.
Thank you for coming straight from the airport to meet up with us.
Yes.
So this is Chris Simon again, signing off with Nancy Blackwell, meeting you where you are. Stay tuned for more episodes.
Thank you.